everybody.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Lights Out. I'm your host, Josh, and I'm joined today by Annabelle. Annabelle's joining me as Austin is out today. Also, Danny, our producer, is here with me, so I'm not completely alone with this demented doll. What's up, Danny? How are you doing, man?
What's up, guys? Hope everybody's doing well.
Today, we got a really wild story for you. It's been a minute since we've talked about exorcisms and demonic possession, and we have a story that took place in fairly recently. It kind of came to a conclusion a few years ago, but a modern case of demonic possession or a severe case of food poisoning gone untreated is a big question here today. But the family of Kennedy Ife believed that he had become demonically possessed, and things just went downhill from there. And that's all I'm going to tell you at this point. But this story is wild. It's also very tragic what ends up happening to Kennedy Ife, but this is a story you definitely don't hear about every day. And we're going to jump across the pond for this one. This one takes place in North London, actually. So I'm curious if any of you UK listeners out there have heard of the story of Kennedy Ife, because there is just very little information on this story out there. Even news articles, there's not even a picture of Kennedy out there, which was kind of weird to me because it seems like this would have been a really big story and would have gotten a lot of media coverage, but it really doesn't seem like it. Or maybe I just don't know where to look when it comes to UK news, but this is a very bizarre and honestly disturbing story. So we'll go ahead and just jump right into things today, if that's all right with you, Annabelle. Cool, let's do it. So our story begins in 2016 with 26-year-old IT worker Kennedy Ife, and he lived with his family on Lancaster Avenue in Barnet, North London, which is, I had to look this up on a map to figure out where this was. I've only been to London once, and you know, I didn't spend a whole lot of time there, but this is, looks like it's outside of Enfield, which we all know about the Enfield haunting episode with the Warren Files. So it was interesting that this happens very close to where that story took place. But Kenneth's family consisted of his mother, who is 56-year-old Josephine, she goes by Joe, and his father is 64-year-old Kenneth. And his father was a Nigerian immigrant and a professor who also worked as a global economic consultant. He was a strong supporter and consultant of the economic community of West Africa and had even met Queen Elizabeth on several occasions. He was very successful in his field, highly educated, and had built up a long list of work experience and many accolades over the years. Kennedy also lived there with his five brothers. He had a brother named Roy, who's 33, a brother named Harry, who's 32, Colin, who's 26, Samuel, who's 20, and Daniel, who was 20. And they all worked as marketing executives. And they all lived together in this million-dollar seven-bedroom house. The family, from all accounts, seemed to be well-liked by their neighborhood and neighbors. But by August 2016, the family dynamic really began changing for the worse. Kennedy first complained to his family about his throat hurting after he had gone out to eat at a Chinese buffet on August 13, 2016. At the time, nobody thought it was a big deal because I think we can all attest to eating at a buffet at some point in our lives, having some type of food issue as a result of eating at a buffet. And that's just kind of, I think, a risk buffets take. Correct me if I'm wrong, Danny, as you worked in restaurants before. I feel like buffets always run risks when it comes to food safety. Like, there's just an inherent risk there.
Yeah, 100%. It's not so much the food prepared in the kitchen. It's more so when the food's set out in the hot plates for so long. That's where the bacteria really starts to grow. And just so everybody knows, for the future and for your own food safety, food that's between 40 degrees and 140 degrees Fahrenheit can only exist in that period for about 4 hours before bacteria starts to become a big concern. We call it the danger zone. So whenever you have food, just make sure that it's stored cold or served hot. Anything in between that, in that zone, is pretty dangerous.
But it seems like as a customer of a buffet, you're really trusting that the restaurant is monitoring the temps and time frames that the food is out. And sometimes it seems like what I've seen personally is they'll bring hot food out, but rather than replace what's left of the tray, they'll just dump it in.
Yeah.
So is that cross-contamination potentially if that food's been compromised?
Technically, yes, it is. Yeah. And if you, my best piece of advice for going to a buffet is always go to a busy buffet. Don't go to a slow one.
Yeah. Honestly, that's a great piece of advice because the food's being eaten as soon as it's comes out and being replaced with hot food. So your chances of getting sick seem to be less.
Exactly.
If it's a busy buffet.
Exactly.
Versus one where you walk in and everything, if it looks bad.
It's got that film on it from being under the heat lamps for so long, you know, just avoid it.
Like a puddle of grease over the top of it that's like shining. Like, yeah, I've been to a few sketchy buffets in the past for sure. Obviously, Kennedy wasn't feeling well. So he did end up visiting a doctor and he had, you know, there's something going on with his throat. He felt like it was more severe than just a typical sore throat. He even told the doctor, he said it felt like something was crawling around in there, which I've never experienced that personally. And that's very terrible to think about. The only thing I can relate to with that is getting something stuck in your throat where you like feel something, you know, something's there, but crawling around's like, what'd you eat, a worm or something? Like that's,
that makes me think tapeworm, but
oh, that's, ew. Yeah, that's bizarre. So the doctor couldn't find anything unusual or concerning with Kennedy's health. It seemed just like a basic sore throat and that it would clear up on its own. A few days passed, but Kennedy's throat was still a problem and his family also noticed uncharacteristic mood swings from him. He all of a sudden had violent outbursts at the smallest things and everything just seemed to set him off. According to what they've said, he also began having breathing problems and stomach pains as well. And even his IT work began to suffer due to this ailment, and he even had to begin skipping work completely. He stopped eating, and his family members began noticing severe weight loss, which I feel like at this point, maybe it's time to go to the hospital and, you know, get some scans done and really take a deep dive into your health a little bit more. Well, that's unfortunately not what happened. One night, Kennedy's siblings went into his room to check on him and they found him hunched over in a chair, whispering to himself. As they listened closer, it sounded like he was arguing, and according to them, he was speaking to himself with two different voices. Again on August 18th, his brother heard Kennedy mumbling in his room, and when they went in, they found him in bed, and he told his brothers that a seed had been planted inside of his stomach, and he had been hearing voices in his head. His mood and behavior only got worse within the next week, and by August 19, 2016, he began screaming and cursing at his parents. He would throw tantrums, break things, and toss his food on the floor, and he basically reverted from this grown adult to the behavior of a frustrated toddler. This is, I mean, I don't know even what to make of this. Is there anything that could possibly cause this extreme of a reaction?
I mean, maybe severe dehydration and along with a bunch of pains and aches. I mean, I can see how someone just having severe dehydration and being in a lot of pain over the course of a couple of days, I can see them kind of losing their mind, but acting like a toddler, I don't know.
Like what would cause such severe mood swings to the point where you're almost unrecognizable by your own family? That's what's crazy. Like, would a parasite do that?
Not any parasite I know.
Right. And maybe it's not a parasite. Maybe it's something else. So his father, Kenneth, and his brother, Roy, thought sleep deprivation might have been the cause of Kennedy's health problems. And this isn't really a bad guess, because according to the Cleveland Clinic, sleep deprivation can have a wide range of negative effects on the body, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and type 2 diabetes. And it can ruin your body's immune system. It can cause a higher pain sensitivity or intensity and can also negatively affect your brain and mental health. Sleep deprivation also makes it harder to manage and process your emotions, and it can amplify symptoms of depression and, of course, anxiety. But unfortunately, Kennedy never returned to the doctor. According to Joe, Kennedy outright refused to see a doctor or go to the hospital. His health had deteriorated within only a week of initially seeing a doctor, which if things get that much worse in just 1 week since you saw the doctor, I'm pretty sure the doctor is obligated to tell you, hey, this is what I think it is, but if things get worse, come back. And the fact that that doesn't happen, and obviously, according to the family, Kennedy's refusing to go to the doctor, I feel like it's the responsibility of the family members at this point to bring him into the doctor or to the hospital if it's getting this bad. But Kennedy soon became convinced that a serpent or a python was living inside of him, and somehow he needed to figure out how to extract it, but he was worried that it would end up killing him if he tried. And what he had felt in his throat after the Chinese buffet was making its way deeper inside of his body. One of the earliest representations of serpents in mythology is the Egyptian god of chaos, Apep, who embodied darkness and disorder. But one of the most common references is the serpent in the Genesis story of the Bible. And I figure this is most likely what Kennedy is referencing, since the Ife family were all very dedicated to the Christian church Jesus Sanctuary Ministries. So we did some digging, and it looks like this is a non-denominational Christian church that began in Nigeria in 1997. It currently has one branch in London and another in Lawrenceville, Georgia, and the other six branches are in Nigeria. The head pastor who created the church considers himself a prophet, and their mission states the following. The vision of Jesus Sanctuary Ministries was given to pastor, and I'm going to butcher his name, but here's my best pronunciation of it, Uzor Ndekwa, before he had become a pastor. In 1997, God revealed a dream to him. Apparently, Pastor Uzor climbed the earth with an unaccountable number of souls following him as he climbed closer and closer towards heaven. After he had awoken, the Spirit of God told him that he is called to bring people back to heaven and that he has been given the commission to win 1 billion souls for Christ. So, you know, take that for what you will. I mean, this seems like a pretty intense version of Christianity, if you ask me. But going back to the story of Genesis, Eve discovers a serpent in the Garden of Eden and it tempts Adam and Eve with the promise of eating from the tree of knowledge and becoming similar to God. The story also touches on temptation and what would later become the concept of original sin. And the serpent has since gotten the reputation of being evil. Some traditionally identify the serpent as Satan speaking through the snake, but it isn't explicitly stated in the Bible. In Revelation, Satan is referred to as a serpent a few times. I've always assumed from my days reading the Bible that that was in fact what it was in the Garden of Eden. Satan was a serpent. Obviously, everything kind of depends on the translation that you're reading. But in Revelation, Satan is referred to as a serpent a few times. For example, chapter 12, verse 9 says, "And the dragon was thrown down, that ancient serpent who is called the devil and Satan, the deceiver of the whole world. He was thrown down to earth, and his angels were thrown down with him." Or there's another example from chapter 20, verse 2. It says, "He seized the dragon, that ancient serpent who is the devil or Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. Bible passages like this are why Christians often see snakes as a representation of Satan. So you can kind of start connecting the dots here. And Kennedy's behavior coupled with his beliefs obviously are what is making the connection to this serpent inside of him. Late one night, one of Kennedy's brothers found him standing in the hallway in his boxers, and he seemed to be in some sort of trance. He had a 1,000-yard stare, and both of his hands were inside of his boxers. When his brother asked if he was all right, Kennedy started mumbling incoherently. Apparently, he was saying things about the mark of the beast in 666, which refers to the book of Revelation in the Bible, but he's most likely referencing the beast of the sea, often interpreted as the Antichrist. Its mark is the number 666, or sometimes 616, depending on the translation you're reading. Kennedy then seemed to snap out of his trance and broke down crying, asking God to forgive him. His mother Jo thought that Kennedy was fighting with himself. As he stood in front of his family with his hands in his boxers, he confessed that he had the urge to cut off his own penis, thinking it was a way to get rid of the serpent inside of him. He even later tried to attack his mother, Jo, but she was able to barricade herself in her bedroom. The brothers claimed that Kennedy had charged at her bedroom door and tried to kick it in, but they were able to restrain him. After this whole fiasco, the family agreed it was time that they did something. But instead of doing what we would all do in this circumstance and either call the paramedics, bring him to the hospital, or call a mental health professional, the family decided, you know what? This calls for a spiritual solution. And as we mentioned earlier, the Ife family have been dedicated Christian members of the Jesus Sanctuary Ministries in Southeast London. So Jo, also known as Sister Jo in the church, reached out for help. For the longest time, fast food was seemingly my best friend. It's so convenient, so yummy, but man, is it bad for you. And after a while, I started just feeling absolutely terrible about my health. And so this year I've been really trying to eat healthier, but eating better has never been easier with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. With Factor, you can enjoy fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals that are ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and even Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. I mean, it's just such a difference when you're eating fresh food instead of processed foods. I've been feeling so much better, and it's great to have Factor meals to come home to when we don't feel like cooking, but we don't want to order something. But even better, Factor meals are an awesome lunch to bring with you to work or even a quick breakfast in the morning. And I've been really impressed with just how delicious Factor's meals are and also the variety. And they just keep coming out with more and more recipes, which I absolutely love, like ground pork, cheddar and chili and mac, chicken Alfredo pasta that's actually healthy for you, cilantro chicken. And they also have great breakfast items like apple cinnamon pancakes, honey yogurt pancakes, everything seasoned gravy and bacon scramble, which, oh, sounds so delicious. Even banana walnut overnight oats. So they've got you covered from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed with delicious ready-to-eat meals that you just throw in the microwave for 2 minutes and enjoy. And I've got a special offer for you to take advantage of if you're interested in trying out Factor. Head to factormeals.com/lightsout50 and use code lightsout50 to get 50% off. That's code lightsout50 at factormeals.com/lightsout50 to get 50% off. Seriously, take my word for it. I love them and I know you will too. So this person she reached out to at the church was a church volunteer named Andrew. And on August 20th, he was sent to the family's home along with Father Pete and Brother Emika to pray for Kennedy's health. And here's a quote from Andrew recalling his visit to the home. He said, quote, "When I arrived at church, I was informed that we had been instructed to attend the address of Sister Jo to pray for Kennedy. Together, we arrived at Sister Jo's house at 10:59 p.m. Colin opened the door and we were ushered into the living room. I saw Kennedy lying down on the settee. He had a mobile phone in his hand. He seemed to be typing something on his phone and texting someone. I said hi, and he said hi. He looked at me directly in the eyes. He looked unwell, and he looked tired." So that right there tells me, as Danny alluded to, clearly there's severe hydration and likely severe sleep deprivation going on, 100%. Which severe sleep deprivation, I believe, can cause hallucinations, can cause all sorts of things to go crazy with the mind. So the fact that they're just like, he can notice that something's up with Kennedy and still nobody's like, maybe we should get him some medical help. But nah, let's continue with the spiritual solution because it's definitely what's going on here. Andrew continued saying, quote, "I believed he was a pastor, but I had never seen him before. Sister Jo asked if we could let the man take over. He prayed for God to keep Kennedy and heal him. I felt quite angry that we had been instructed to come. After they left, we continued to sit and pray. Kennedy sat up when we went to leave, and he looked at me like he had a fever. He was not as bright as he had seemed when I had met him in the past." So multiple people are seeing this dude is very ill.
Yeah, 100%.
And even the fact that they could notice that he had a fever says a lot.
It really does. And I mean, I know some people are probably thinking like, oh, what about the sleepwalking? I mean, from my personal experience, my brother, when he was, I don't know, like 18, 19, and he had a
foodborne illness too, he slept walked for like 3 nights in a row.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't think it's super uncommon. And I'm even reading that it's more common in children to sleepwalk when they get ill, but there are reports of adults doing it. So, I mean, so far, it just seems like this man is really ill and needs to go to a hospital.
But they're taking what he's saying in this state as evidence that, no, he's physically ill because he has a serpent demon living inside of him. So we needed to deal with that first before we deal with the medical side of things, which is just, I feel so bad for Kennedy because of how stupid these people are being.
Yeah.
Like, let's be real with this. And I'm sure you out there are like, what the hell is wrong with this family? Like, at what point does somebody's physical health become more important than someone's spiritual health?
Exactly.
I just don't know what to do with this. According to Andrew, Kennedy was not restrained while they were there at the house. They spent several hours praying for him and the family held multiple sessions, but his condition only worsened. He was angrier than before and he even threatened to attack Joe and bite Kenneth, so his own parents. By now, Kennedy's whole family believed that he was possessed by a demon. And Kenneth decided he would take control of the situation. Kenneth believed that constraining his son, along with consistent prayer, would eventually exorcise the demon inside of him. None of the family members saw Kennedy's problems as a medical emergency. They only saw it as a spiritual one. His brothers then teamed up to hold Kennedy down to his bed. Then they used cable ties, ropes, and handcuffs to restrain him. Kennedy would scream at the top of his lungs and even growled like an animal. And for 3 days, Kennedy remained in his bed. The brothers claimed they only tied him down for 20-minute intervals throughout the day, but Kenneth allowed them to use overwhelming force if necessary. The brothers also took shifts watching over Kennedy 24 hours a day. Here's a quote from Kennedy's brother Colin. He said, "It's clear that thing was in him. What we believed was a demon because it was not natural. It was clearly trying to kill him. We had to restrain him from himself. It was clear if we didn't restrain him, he could have tried to harm people in our family." Okay, that's one way to look at it, I guess. Or he's trying to get away from you guys because he's dying. Like,
panicking.
Yeah, panicking. Imagine being in that state. Like, you probably would turn on your family if they're holding you down 100%. As you're dying.
Yeah.
I would. I'd start attacking them too. Be like, get away from me. Like, I need help.
I mean, at this point, just take them to the hospital.
Yeah. It's
have them restrain them.
Right. If they need, like, what? Like, deal with the demon after he gets help, right? Like, what are you? What are you doing?
It's crazy.
Oh,
and obviously,
God.
These people are you know, intelligent and well-educated.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's so crazy about it.
It really seems like, I mean, I understand that faith can do crazy things to people, but I mean, it seems like it's crazy to me. It's crazy to me.
I think it's just one of those things that's hard to understand with people who have such strong religious beliefs, who are also very intelligent from like, a knowledge standpoint. You know, they are very successful people. They make a lot of money. They've done really well in the world. And it's like, they can't possibly have been successful in this side of their life without being logical and thinking through things. But then to see them in this way, where they let their faith completely take over that side of their thinking and cloud their judgment in such a serious way is mind-boggling to me. I'm like,
it really is.
Wow. Like, that just shows you how deep in it they really are. So as Kennedy lost more of his strength, this might have been interpreted as a sign that the demon was leaving his body. Okay. But really, the poor guy is just slowly dying. And it didn't take very long before he quickly became severely dehydrated and his breathing was weakening. The family was later accused of denying Kennedy food and water, but The family claimed that this was not true, which I believe once you get to severe dehydration, like you can't even drink water. Like it's not good. Like you need IVs at that point.
Yeah.
It needs to go straight into the bloodstream.
Yeah, he needs to be hospitalized.
And of course, when you are in that state, you're not going to be like, I want food and drink right now. Like you can't help yourself at that point.
Yeah.
Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
After 2 days, the family still didn't take him to the hospital or call emergency services. They still considered this a domestic issue that the family would solve together. Didn't take long before Kennedy was completely delirious. And in the early morning of August 22nd, the family began their morning prayer, and according to one of the brothers, Kennedy shot out of bed and prepared to attack them. Kennedy then started biting his own wrists, so the family pinned him down and tied him to the bed once again. The slow exorcism lasted about 3 days straight until Kennedy suffered a seizure, and the family at that point, after seeing him have a seizure, were like, oh no, maybe something is wrong with him. And they end up calling emergency services around 9 a.m. on August 22nd. Henry Ife told operators that his brother Kennedy was complaining of dehydration and had gotten, quote, a bit cold to the touch. Just all I can do is shake my head because it's just so crazy that they let this go on for so long. When paramedics arrived, they found Kennedy still strapped to the bed. Not only that, he looked unresponsive. Meanwhile, his family members were chanting prayers over his body, trying to resuscitate him. Which is like chanting prayers, like how about CPR at this point or something, like anything. And unfortunately, Kennedy had already been dead for an unknown amount of time. Paramedics watched as the family members continued the ritual. They didn't stop when they came in. They just keep doing what they were doing. And I can't imagine what the paramedics must have thought when they saw this. But the family was chanting, we thank you because his soul will be returned from the power of the grave. We thank you because his spirit has returned to himself. God, you have returned his spirit back into the body you gave him. So clearly they're doing some type of like resurrection ritual, hoping that God will return life to Kennedy's body. The paramedics then released Kennedy's body from the restraints, and when they inspected him, his body was covered in bruises and scratches. They also believed that his constraints made breathing difficult, and they found that Kennedy had a temperature of 40.8 degrees Celsius or 105.4 degrees Fahrenheit, which is very high fever for an extended period of time.
That's insane.
So the paramedics attempted to lower his body temperature and resuscitate him, but Kennedy was sadly pronounced dead at 10:17 a.m. by the paramedics. They also noted that Kenneth and his four sons also had minor injuries to their bodies. Police arrived soon after and witnessed Kennedy's brother Colin holding his arms out in front of his brother's body, and he was screaming, "Arise in the light of God. He is released right now in the name of Jesus. No corpse shall be taken from this place because there is no corpse in this place. We call that name back in the land of the living in the name of Jesus." Police believe that they had walked into a resurrection prayer. They did perform an autopsy on Kennedy, and it later revealed that the official cause of death was cardiac arrest, and this might have been due to severe dehydration. The autopsy also discovered over 60 injuries on his body. Many were consistent with forceful restraint, and his injuries also included a possible self-inflicted bite mark. So, after the autopsy and in doing the investigation, obviously the police are involved, they did end up arresting all seven of his family members, and they charged them with manslaughter, false imprisonment, and causing or allowing the death of a vulnerable adult. But all of the family members pled not guilty. The case went to trial in February 2019, so only a few years ago, at the Old Bailey Criminal Court in London. During the trial, police officers who arrived at the scene were called to testify, and they claimed that the family had tried to conceal evidence during the initial search. Police found a bag in a neighboring garden that contained a pair of handcuffs, wristbands, and 379 cable ties. The prosecution called the bag an Ife family false imprisonment kit. Kennedy's brother, 33-year-old Roy, admitted that he had hid the bag, but not because of any criminal actions toward his brother. He hid it because he didn't know if it was illegal for a civilian to own handcuffs, which I don't know. I don't know if I believe that, because I think we all know it's not illegal. I know here in the US and in the UK, it's not illegal for a citizen to own a pair of handcuffs. I mean, you can buy fuzzy handcuffs for other reasons, you know, like that's technically still a handcuff. And I don't think those are illegal really anywhere. But police also found a note in Joe's room on her bed, and it read, "Anyone who has bewitched your son or daughter, if you feel your child is under a spell, pick up earth and throw it to the north, south, east, west for 4 days, and there will be an encounter." Police also found a book in the house titled Anger, Madness, and the Demonic: The Psychological Genesis of Violence, Evil, and Creativity. And it contained a chapter on exorcism versus psychiatry. The author advised that exorcism, quote, is always conducted by a team of at least three or more. The testimonies by family members and religious leaders made it unclear who was responsible for specific actions over that 67-hour long exorcism that took place. It was also unclear who bought the handcuffs and cable ties, and some family members claimed the 300-plus cable ties were left in the home by cable workers. Very convenient, if you ask me, but maybe they did. The minister's testimony claimed that when they saw Kennedy on August 20th, he was alert, unharmed, and unbound. Their claims didn't match with the pathologist's post-mortem examination. It might have been possible that the family released Kennedy when the ministers were present, and then as soon as they left, they tied him back up again, which makes a lot of sense to me. In court, they heard from Mother Jo, and she claimed she never once used force against Kennedy. She had also recorded parts of the exorcism to upload to her church's YouTube channel, which don't see how that is a great thing to put out there. Here's a video of me slowly killing my son. Well, they did put those out there, but those videos are no longer available for obvious reasons. But they had allegedly titled the video "The Reality of Demons." So I don't know. Seems like they really did believe he was demonically possessed.
Yeah, it really does seem like that.
To go that far that you're like recording this as like proof of your beliefs and then putting it out on the church's YouTube channel. Like
that seems kind of slimy in my eyes. Like,
oh yeah, it's totally fucked up too.
Yeah.
To do that to your own son who can't consent to that, obviously. I don't know, man. I'm seriously questioning this family.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of them so far.
No, definitely not a fan. I mean, I think they deserve to be locked up for manslaughter and these crimes they were charged with. Because, like, what the hell, dude? When you're a vulnerable adult and your own family is doing this to you, like, what chance do you have in this?
Yeah.
You know? And to not be able to get help on your own and these people just, like, keep you there and ultimately you die as a result, somebody's got to be held responsible.
100%. I'm wondering if Kennedy ever asked for help or ever asked to go to the hospital and they denied him that due to their beliefs. That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, I wonder. I'm sure there's more to the story there, and I'm sure there's other reasons why they didn't take him right away. Like, why'd they wait till the seizures,
right,
for them to finally call the paramedics? And maybe they're at that point they were worried that he was going to die. And so they're like, oh no, he's having seizures now. I mean, that's really scary to watch somebody have a seizure. So maybe that was kind of like, oh no, like maybe he's actually really, this isn't just a demon that's doing this to him. Or I don't know. I'm really curious why they called at that point.
But then they doubled down.
Yeah.
And they still believed it was a demon. So I don't know. This whole thing is weird. And it, frankly, it stinks a little bit to me. It seems a little fishy.
It does seem a little fishy because in court even, Jo admitted to believing in evil spirits, demons, miracles, and resurrections, but she defended herself saying it wasn't unusual for her Christian faith. She also defended the use of restraints, saying that they were necessary so Kennedy didn't harm himself or anyone else. Okay, so first of all, you know, as I'll get into here a little bit more, you know, this belief in evil spirits, demons, miracles, and resurrections, I can agree that it's not unusual for many denominations of Christianity to believe in those things. But I would have to say, as somebody formerly a part of this church or this religion that I could probably attest to everybody that I knew that we believed in it to a certain extent. And that if any of us or any of the people that I had known or pastors that I had known had witnessed something like this happening or knew the events of this, they would have absolutely called the paramedics 100%. Or brought them to the hospital. So in my opinion, that's a pretty weak argument to use.
Yeah. And I mean, on a personal level, I find issues when belief systems get in the way of modern medicine, because it seems, I don't want to say silly to me, because that's rude, but it just seems illogical, and it seems frankly dangerous, because without modern medicine, there would be so much more illness and death in the world, and it seems ridiculous that people would deny that solely based off of their beliefs.
Totally. When it's, I mean, we have such a track record of this point of how it's improved the quality of life. I mean, age expectancy was not great back in the day.
No.
Prior to modern medicine.
No.
People died from simple infections all the time. And so, yeah, that's where, and these guys are such intelligent people, you know, like they're clearly educated. I'm sure they had a few science classes in there.
100%. They're probably vaccinated with something. Like,
yeah, very true. So I don't know, like, did they really believe in this, or is there other reasons that they did what they did?
I don't know.
Like, we used restraints because he didn't want him to harm himself. Well, if he's going to harm himself, probably should get the authorities involved and get him some help. Like,
I mean, it's obvious they can afford it.
Yeah.
Like, they live in a multi-million dollar house.
I don't know. Something's not adding up here. The prosecutor on the case, Tom Little, argued that the family had murdered Kennedy because of their misguided religious beliefs, which is also a bold claim, but one that I think is somewhat valid. He said, quote, his own family decided that because he'd become and remained unwell, he should be restrained with cable ties, rope, and handcuffs. The 999 call that was eventually made for expert assistance was too late. The family put misguided religious beliefs about this young man being possessed by a demon or evil spirits before the obvious and common sense conclusion that he needed help and did not need to be restrained. Whether this was some form of exorcism will be a matter for you in due course. In short, the Ife family took the law into their own hands. The paramedics were told that for the last 3 days, Kennedy had been behaving abnormally and had been violent and aggressive. Collins states that by August 18th, he looked weak and complained about a seed in his stomach. He stated that Kennedy believed that he had a demon inside his body waiting to kill him. The family stated that they had been required to restrain Kennedy physically. He subsequently developed breathing difficulties, and as a result, they called the emergency services. They had put their misguided religious beliefs about this young man being possessed by a demon or evil spirits before the obvious and common sense conclusion that he needed help and did not need to be restrained. I think we can all agree with that analysis here. Prosecutors painted the situation as a long form of torture, and I tend to agree with that, honestly. And they said the family treated Kennedy like a, quote, animal or, quote, detainee. The family defended themselves, though, claiming they only did what was in Kennedy's best interest and that they had to restrain him for his own good. That seems very like a weak argument at this point, when that's clearly the wrong decision here.
Yeah. Yeah. If you felt like he was a danger to himself or others, then they should have immediately called the authorities and gotten them involved immediately, without question.
And they would probably still have their brother here, their family member here. So it's like, could there be other motives for why they did this? Like, did they want him out of the picture for some reason? I wonder, there's gotta be more to this story that just never was released, because it just
swept under the rug.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it gets even worse. So Kenneth clarified that the exorcism had no connection to any religious cults, occult beliefs, or secret societies, but Kenneth admitted that he was once involved in those things, which that's very interesting to me. So who knows what he was into prior to, you know, being a part of this new church he's a part of and his belief system, and maybe even what he's done in the past. That's a big question mark for me. When lawyers asked why the family waited so long to call emergency services, they said, "It was a domestic issue." Terrible excuse. What? Domestic issue? They didn't believe that Kennedy's behavior was due to a mental health issue, and they did not think the rituals would end up killing Kennedy. But the trial lasted about a month, and the jury ended up deliberating for 4 days. Before they announced the verdict, one of the jury members was seen smiling and nodding at the family members as they entered the courtroom on March 14, 2019. Allegedly, two other jurors were seen holding their hands together in prayer. Seems like jury selection might have been a bit of an issue there, potentially compromised. But in the end, Judge Anthony Leonard read the verdict, and you're not going to believe this, or maybe you will believe this, but the entire Ife family was acquitted on every single one of those criminal charges, which is absolutely crazy to me.
Even if they didn't intentionally try to kill their son, which I can believe, I can believe that they didn't try to do that, but there was neglect here. There was abuse here. They did not handle this situation well. There should be charges brought on these family members. There really should be.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. And it reminds me of a similar story we've covered here on Lights Out, which was the exorcism of Janet Moses in New Zealand. And it was kind of a similar situation to this one. And ultimately, one uncle and four aunts that were part of the exorcism with Janet, in the end, they were found guilty of manslaughter in her death. And the fact that that didn't happen in this case is absolutely insane. And obviously, two different countries, two different situations, but it seems like similar enough, similar charges, and yet no accountability is taken by the family.
Yeah.
And I just am like, what happened here? And I don't know. I go back to those jurors that were like nodding at the, like, maybe there's some religious similar, maybe people part of their church following out, you know, yeah. Like there could have been people there protecting them. I mean, they're pretty well connected in their community. So maybe it was somebody they knew. And I'm not really familiar with the UK criminal justice system or how they select jurors, but I know here in the United States, like that would have been probably an issue. And those people hopefully would have not been selected to be part of the jury, should be impartial and fair, but I don't know. It doesn't seem like it was exactly a fair trial in the sense of getting justice for Kennedy here. And obviously, this tragedy raises a ton of important questions about how does the legal system deal with cases regarding religious beliefs and practices? I mean, obviously, freedom of religion is protected by law, but I feel like there's this line, this fine line that's very blurred at times. Like, what is considered religious expression versus just straight criminal act, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's like why this one is so tricky, is because by all accounts, and according to what we know, it seems like the family really stuck behind their story and very much proved, I guess, to some extent that this is why they were doing it. And all of them too, right? All of them are taking part in this and all sticking to the story of like, we believed it was a domestic issue. He was possessed by a demon, so we were trying to help him spiritually. But I just can't look past the health indicators. Like, at the very least, the negligence. Like, they're just like, the negligence on their part to not get him help. Like, couldn't you have brought the paramedics in? He could have gotten some IV bags and then continued the prayers, like, and continued the process of the exorcism. Like, to me, I don't understand how they are not guilty of at least not getting him help. Like, continue what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Don't stop what you're doing. But that's what tells me that something more nefarious was going on here.
Yeah.
That sounds like they were beating him. Potentially, he had 60 different marks and scratches and bruises. So what's up with that? Is that just from all the restraints? And why are they restraining him so much? I don't know.
This whole thing, like I said earlier, this whole thing kind of seems fishy. And I mean, I'm all for freedom of religious expression as well.
Absolutely.
But when it comes to situations like this, there's a fine line between you know, religious expression and abuse in my eyes. And
absolutely.
I mean, I know that's a harsh statement, but when it comes to things like this, why wouldn't they just bring him into the hospital, get him stable, you know, get him with an IV, get him looked at by doctors, nurses, and get him stable, and then try and do the exorcisms or whatever they were trying to do? Like, I don't understand why you can't mix both together.
Right. Why was it one over the other? And that makes me really suspicious of the family of, like, yeah, there was another reason why they were doing this that is far worse than we know. And I don't know. I mean, we don't have enough information here to really, like, come to a conclusion on that, obviously, but it does make me question, was this always about the demon inside of him? And, like, how did we go from potentially just food poisoning from eating at a Chinese restaurant or a buffet to now he's got a living evil serpent crawling through his body? And therefore, and maybe he was feeling that. Maybe he was feeling like there was something crawling through his body. Yeah. Isn't that cause for concern to be like, well, maybe we should go get a scan done and make sure there isn't actually something crawling through your body.
Actual, like, you know, parasite or something.
Right. Yeah. That was my first thought. I was like, oh, it sounds like something. If there is, because I've heard people who've had, like, serious parasites. And I think with parasites, obviously they need some time.
Yeah.
To live in there and grow, and, like, before you really start feeling things like tapeworms and stuff like that. But I have heard that people who've had, like, big long tapeworms in them and stuff have felt like something's, like, moving inside them and stuff.
Yeah, because it is.
Yeah, exactly. It is.
And that's one of my biggest fears, honestly, is getting a parasite, like a tapeworm or something.
Oh. Ugh. Or, like, going somewhere that has, like, an abundance of parasites, and, like, or, like, being in a body of water that's known to have a parasites or something, and something swimming up one of your cavities or something. It's like, it's always terrifying when you hear about those things. But it's very clear that there is a failure of the legal system here too. Like, they should have been able to discern, and maybe they did. Maybe they gave it their best shot, and ultimately it came down to what the jury came back with, and then the judge decided. But I'm honestly surprised that nobody was held responsible for this, because it's just so obvious that they played a role in this young man's death, for sure.
Yeah.
But I wanted to end this by just, like, talking about, how did we get here? Like, what actually happened? And, you know, we talked about a little bit earlier with, like, foodborne illnesses, and maybe, like, we're kind of thinking, you know, maybe he did get food poisoning at the Chinese buffet, which, you get one of the symptoms of food poisoning is dehydration, right?
Mm-hmm. Through vomiting. And diarrhea.
Yep, exactly. So you're losing a lot of liquids, and if you're not replenishing your body with electrolytes and fluids, like, you could die. I mean, just straight up.
Hallucinations, seizures, a lot of the things that were on that list, a lot of those things can be caused by dehydration.
And that's what, I mean, and then to the fact that he died of cardiac arrest too, like, oh, being restrained, like breathing, not being able to breathe, you're dehydrated, you're hallucinating potentially. Oh, it's just, I mean, what a horrible way to die. Like,
seriously,
thinking about what he went through during that nearly, like, 70 hour period, it is a long form of torture.
It really is.
Is what he went through, and just nobody is held responsible for that. Yeah. So, like, looking, you know, I just kind of looked into this a little bit, but with food poisoning, according to the American College of Gastroenterology, the most common symptoms of foodborne illness are nausea, vomiting, abdominal pain, diarrhea, and fevers, which explains a lot of the symptoms he was exhibiting. Some symptoms start within hours, and others do not start until days to weeks after eating or drinking the offending item. More serious symptoms, such as bloody bowel movements or bloody vomiting, chest pain, irregular heartbeat, headaches, confusion, changes in vision, weakness, muscle paralysis, or hallucinations, can be a sign of a severe infection that should be evaluated immediately by a medical professional. So it could have even been, not only is he suffering from severe dehydration, but he may also have had a serious infection due to a foodborne illness. Mm-hmm. And people die of foodborne illnesses every year. And luckily that number is going down in most cases and in most countries. But what I was saying from like the CDC, each year about 3,000 Americans die from foodborne illness, 128,000 are hospitalized. So it's a serious issue. And I know your time in the kitchen, like I'm sure that's like number, like kitchen training 101, how not to kill the people that eat at your restaurant.
100%. There's even full courses and certifications you can get on just, they're called ServSafe. And there's ones for bartenders, there's ones for servers, there's ones for kitchen workers, kitchen managers. And it's really important that all, at least in my belief, that all workers in a restaurant should at least understand the big ideas behind it. Maybe some of the smaller little things that don't apply to them, maybe not necessary. But I do think that every single restaurant employee should know about foodborne illnesses and how to avoid spreading them. It's so important.
Yeah. Did you ever have any foodborne illness outbreaks at any places you worked?
No, we never really had any outbreaks from at least what the kitchen produced. The closest we had to it was, do you remember when Chipotle had that whole thing with their E. coli and the lettuce
yeah.
and everything?
Yeah.
There was a huge recall on iceberg lettuce nationally. So we just had to throw away all of our iceberg lettuce and we were out of salads that day. But besides that, no, all the kitchens I've worked in have been really, really clean.
Interesting. So really, foodborne illnesses happen as a result of how the food is prepared or how long cooked food sits out in certain temperatures.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that can cause bacterial growth. And a lot of the times it may not even be the restaurant or the people preparing the food that cause it. A lot of times it can come from where it was produced, when it wasn't handled correctly, washed correctly, like the E. coli in the lettuce.
So yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of possible scenarios with this one. I think it sounds like it unfortunately started with just a foodborne illness that spiraled out of control, an infection that possibly occurred as a result, and then the severe dehydration, and then literally being tortured by your family for a bunch of days. It's just absolutely horrible what happened to Kennedy. And yeah, I'm going to definitely be following this if anything else happens. I'm curious if any of you out there in the UK have heard of this or have heard anything else about what's happened since they've been acquitted, because there's not a whole lot of media coverage out there. But I don't know. I want to know your thoughts. Do you think that Kennedy's family should be held responsible for his death? If not, I mean, I'd like to know your reasons for it, because I mean, I think it's pretty clear to most of us that they definitely played a hand in his death here. And I mean, family or not, or same religion or not, I don't know. This one definitely, I feel, crossed the line into just straight abuse and neglect. And this wasn't just, you know, I think they had to have known that they were killing him.
Yeah.
And they just proceeded.
It was a very easily avoided death, and nobody took those steps to avoid it.
Nope. That's what's sad. But yeah, it's not every day that you hear these types of stories, but exorcisms are still a thing. There's people still doing them. Usually not in this way. There's a lot of people that do exorcisms in a very like safe way, safe environment that's not harmful to the person physically or their health. So it's just, obviously it depends on what religion and what belief system you're speaking about when it comes to exorcisms. But it's always wild to hear that even in this day and age, people are still dying as a result of exorcisms being done on them. It's absolutely crazy to me. But I'm going to go ahead and wrap up today's episode there. If you enjoyed this one, leave us a like, subscribe on YouTube if you're watching. And if you're on a listener on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, make sure you're following, subscribing there too. Leave us a rating and review. We really do appreciate it. And we'll see you guys next week. And until then, lights out, everybody.